This is District Sentinel Radio, your nightly newscast for the left. I'm Sam Sachs.
I'm Sam Knight.
We're broadcasting out of the Harper is a Good Girl studios in Washington, D.C. Check out the website, districtsentinel.com. Let me say, I built the studio a few months ago. We got a lamp in here. It's, you know, we got it wired for internet.
Yeah, we do.
We got light in here if we need it. We don't have air conditioning.
No, we can use
it. It's hot as balls.
It's hot as shit in here.
In the Harper is a Good Girl studios.
And in Washington, D.C. in general. And yeah. I just like to say how bad I wish we were the London Sentinel right now.
Is the weather nice around this time of year?
Well, I'll tell you what is nice. Jeremy Corbyn shitting on Theresa May repeatedly today.
Yeah, the question's for the Prime Minister.
Yeah, imagine being able to cover that instead of all the fucking depressing shit we had to cover today.
I mean, just looking back, I remember being exposed as a child to questions for the Prime Minister and just marveling, because at the time George W. Bush was president, and yeah, I was like, there's no way he'd be able to handle that.
No, he couldn't even handle questions from the press.
Yeah, Trump wouldn't be able to handle that. I think Obama would have handled questions for the Prime Minister pretty well.
I think Trump, he wouldn't have been able to handle it in any sort of conventional sense.
You're right. He would just fling insults at people.
But yeah, he would do better than George W. Bush, who'd just stand up there looking like a fucking monkey, like a confused goddamn... Anyway,
I have two things to note. One, subscribers, check out Patreon. We just put up some bonus content.
Yes.
We interviewed Patrick McAleer from Belfast, who gave us a primer on the DUP.
Yeah.
Also, yesterday, I noted that it was the 13th of June.
Yeah.
When in fact it was the 12th of June.
Yeah.
But no one owned me, so the fuck up is on all of you people.
True.
I was seeing if anyone was paying attention, obviously.
Yeah.
I guess you aren't.
Unbelievable.
But I know you're listening. The stats say you're listening, but not very carefully. All right, it's Tuesday, June 13th. 2017, here's the news. President Trump told reporters Tuesday that he hopes to sign a Republican repeal of Obamacare, quote, as soon as we can do it. Note, he didn't say when he gets the bill right or when it's been presented to the public for review, but just as soon as it can get done. And Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell appears to be operating on the same playbook. It's been reported that Senate Republicans want to get this done before the 4th of July recess, meaning before the end of the month, meaning like 2 or 3 weeks. McConnell has already invoked Rule 14, which would allow him to bypass committees and bring the bill immediately to the floor for a vote. Of course, the problem with all that is it takes about 2 weeks for a CBO score, and so far there's no dang bill. There's no bill in the Senate right now. It was supposed to be finished by Tuesday for the Senate Republican caucus luncheon. It wasn't. They had the luncheon. They didn't have a bill. So we're talking about a signature piece of legislation that Senate Republicans want to pass in a little over 2 weeks that isn't finalized yet, hasn't been released to the public, and won't get a hearing. Last week, Senator Claire McCaskill asked the Senate Finance Committee Chairman Orrin Hatch if it's true that there won't be a public hearing on the bill whenever it comes out. And he basically said, yeah, it's true. With the help of one of his staffers who, as you'll hear, was whispering in his ear the whole time.
So my first question that I would make of the chair is, will we have a hearing on the health care proposal?
Will we?
Yes.
I think we've already had one, but...
No, I mean on the proposal that you're planning to bring to the floor of the Senate for a vote. Will there be a hearing?
Will you? Huh? Well, I don't know that there's going to be another hearing, but we've invited you to participate and give your ideas.
No, that's not true, Mr. Chairman. And when you say that you're inviting us, and I heard you, Mr. Secretary, just say we'd love your support, for what? We don't even know. We have no idea what's being proposed. There's a group of guys in a back room somewhere that are making these decisions. There were no hearings in the House. I mean, listen, this is hard to take.
Can I just say that if, you know, when we have our socialist takeover or whatever, we need to take Orrin Hatch's Senate seat. We need to basically merge Utah, Wyoming, and Idaho. Just have them be one state. North Dakota and South Dakota, too. Guess what? Yeah. One state.
It's pretty telling that the chairman of that committee, the Senate Finance Committee, one of the more powerful committees, the Committee of Jurisdiction for Healthcare Legislation, one of the committees of jurisdiction, needs to be briefed by his staffer when he's asked a simple question like, is there going to be a hearing on this bill? Like, either stand up and say, no, we've had a hearing, that's it, or yes, there'll be a hearing. He's clueless. He has no idea what the plan is or what's going on.
Yeah,
there's a bunch of, you know, 25 to 35 to 40-year-old staffers in behind closed doors right now hammering this thing out, just informing their bosses every now and then on a need-to-know basis at this point.
The best thing Republicans do is fall in line and take orders, and that's what they're doing from Trump right now.
Yeah. Now, should Republicans be able to finalize a healthcare repeal plan and get it scored by the CBO in time? Majority Leader McConnell plans to move it through the Senate through reconciliation, a process by which budget-related matters can be approved by a simple majority vote. Takes the filibuster off the table. 2010, Democrats in the Senate used reconciliation to pass the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare.
Later in the show, we're going to mention the Russia allegations, and we've already mentioned in the show the Obamacare repeal bill. Well, wouldn't you know it, they both intersect and demonstrate why the Democratic Party should be attached to an anvil and thrown in Lake Superior. Vox's Jeff Stein, who's covering the story, tweeted out some of his reporting last night, quote, top Senate Democrat aide emails to say not going nuclear on AHCA also allows them to hammer out bipartisan Russia sanctions deal. It would also delay Sessions from testifying, is what Jeff Stein tweeted.
It's one of the most wretched things I've seen in the last 24 hours.
Yeah.
Playing with millions of people's health care to provoke conflict with Russia.
Yeah. As we noted last week, Democrats cited this sanctions initiative as justification for rushing to support additional sanctions on Iran, penalties that could bring the U.S. out of compliance with President Obama's historic nuclear deal with Iran. Democrats evidently don't really give a shit about Obama's legacy. Now it appears that more sanctions on Russia, sanctions that will probably achieve nothing but the heightening of tensions, these are also being breathlessly pursued and are considered more important, as Sam noted, than attempts to stop healthcare legislation that would strip 23 million people of insurance. Democrats are fucking trash. Now, of course, healthcare reform can and will pass without a single vote from Dems, but a lot of mundane Senate procedures are based on unanimous consent votes, so a single Democrat could delay the proceedings. That could give constituents time to rally activists who could put pressure on vulnerable Republicans, people like Senators Susan Collins, Dean Heller, Lisa Murkowski. But the leading Dem on healthcare, Patty Murray, she doesn't think it's a good idea. Murray told Stein that McConnell could force a vote in 24 hours, which is odd given that they don't even have a fucking bill written yet.
And I saw Weigel note this on Twitter today that, you know, Democrats will have a lot of explaining to do if in the House they sang while Republicans passed this bill and then the Senate didn't even put up any sort of resistance to getting it passed.
Yeah.
And then Neera Tanden chimed in and said, what sort of explanation? It's simple. Republicans passed a bill that's going to strip all insurance from millions of people, and all the Dems voted against it as though that's all they need to do. And, you know, I pointed out to Neera what lots of people have been pointing out, that they staged a goddamn sit-in last year in the House, engaged in civil disobedience to provoke a vote on a gun control, shitty gun control legislation.
Yeah, yeah.
Why not do it over this healthcare bill? And she said they might well do it. So Neera is on record suggesting that Democrats might engage in a sit-in here. So when they don't, maybe she'll be the first one to say they didn't do all they could have actually done.
Neera Tanden on the verge of a good opinion here. We are in uncharted
she'll
waters.
She'll blow it. No, she'll blow it.
Fortunately, not all Senate Dems have such a narrow focus on the Russia stuff. Stein reported this afternoon, quote, Senator Jeff Merkley suggests he's open to withholding consent over AHCA. Stein also noted that Merkley is the first Democrat to make such a threat and that he led the filibustery-type speech against Neil Gorsuch. I should note that Merkley as well, he is apparently visiting Iowa soon for something, possibly a hint that he's considering running for president in 2020. And I got to say, I think Bernie is a little past his prime. Merkley, who is the only senator to endorse Bernie, I don't know if Dems could do any better than nominating Jeff Merkley in 2020.
Yeah.
He's kind of nerdy, kind of got a bit of a Jeremy Corbyn vibe.
We'll see how well he takes down that corn dog up in Iowa. All right, now let's talk about Russia. Attorney General Jeff Sessions headlined the latest must-see hearing in the Senate Intelligence Committee's probe of alleged Russian influence in last year's election.
And just again, this is Democrats did not want to delay this by withholding consent from hearings and such. And
yeah, yeah. That probe in the committee is also looking into possible coordination with Trump campaign officials and likely now obstruction of justice. Sessions had two big caveats in his testimony. One, his memory. He said a lot, you know, the best I can recall, as far as I can remember. Two, his reluctance to reveal the nature of his conversations with President Trump. Here he was under questioning from Senator Dianne Feinstein, who is trying to drill down on what Sessions and Trump talked about prior to Comey's firing.
Did you ever discuss Director Comey's FBI handling of the Russia investigations with the president or anyone else?
Senator Feinstein, that would call for a communication between the Attorney General and the president, and I'm not able to comment on that.
You are not able to answer the question here whether you ever discussed that with him?
That's correct.
And how do you view that, since you discussed his termination, why wouldn't you discuss the reasons?
Well, those were put in writing and sent to the president, and he made those public, so he made that public.
So you'd had no verbal conversation with him about the firing of Mr. Comey?
Discuss with you or confirm or deny the nature of private conversations that I may have had with the president on this subject or others. And I know that how this will be discussed, but that's the rules that has been long adhered to by the Department of Justice, as you know, Senator Feinstein.
Deja vu there to last week's hearing a bit, when all the spy chiefs testified and gave the same evasive answer about their communications with the president. Senator Heinrich then chimed in, and he accused Sessions of obstructing a congressional investigation.
Senator Heinrich, I'm not able to share with this committee private communications.
Because you're invoking executive privilege.
I'm not able to invoke executive privilege. That's the president's prerogative.
Well, my understanding is that you took an oath, you raised your right hand here today, and you said that you would solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And now you're not answering questions. You're impeding this investigation. So my understanding of the legal standard is that you either answer the question, that's the best outcome. You say, this is classified, can't answer it here. I'll answer it in closed session. That's bucket number two. Bucket number three is to say, I'm invoking executive privilege. There is no appropriateness bucket. It is not a legal standard. Can you tell me what are these longstanding DOJ rules that protect conversations made in the executive without invoking executive privilege?
Senator, I'm protecting the president's constitutional right by not giving it away before he has a chance to view
it.
And secondly, I am telling the truth in answering your question in saying it's a longstanding policy of the Department of Justice.
Are those policies written?
And to make sure the president has full opportunity to decide these issues.
Can you share those policies with us? Are they written down at the Department of Justice?
I believe they are.
This is the appropriateness legal standard for not answering congressional inquiries.
It's my judgment.
Things then got further heated when Senator Ron Wyden followed up on some testimony from James Comey last week alleging some problematic behavior by Sessions in alleged contacts with Russian government officials.
General Sessions, respectfully, you're not answering the question.
Well, what is the question?
The question is, Mr. Comey said that there were matters with respect to the recusal that were problematic and he couldn't talk about them. What are they?
Why don't you tell me? There are none, Senator Wyden. There are none. I can tell you that for absolute certainty. This is a secret innuendo being leaked out there about me, and I don't appreciate it.
So Sessions pretty adamant there. He did confirm some of Comey's testimony. He remembered Comey being asked to stay behind at that White House meeting. Sessions confirmed that Comey did talk to him about his discomfort with being left alone with the president. But ultimately, no real bombshells today, and perhaps liberal media outlets should stop priming everyone for bombshells ahead of all this testimony.
This, having watched this hearing, it's even more fucking, I'm just beside myself that this was considered worthy of something to sit through and not delay the vote on healthcare.
Yeah.
Like that, first of all, nothing, like as you noted, very little came out. Second of all, how about icing the kicker, huh? Have they ever heard of icing the kicker? If they withheld consent for the hearing the day before, I think that would have really unnerved Sessions and also Republicans. And he would have had to deal with it longer. And he would have had to deal with all the stress longer. And why the fuck don't they want that?
And he doesn't deal with stress well. He came under questioning from Kamala Harris. And he's like, you got to give me some time. Don't go so fast. I get nervous under pressure. Now, what is a bombshell, though, is Sessions apparently wants to raid medical marijuana shops operating in compliance with state laws. That was reported today. He wrote a letter to Congress urging against adoption of the Blumenauer-Rohrabacher Amendment, which prohibits the Department of Justice from using funds to bust up medical marijuana facilities that operate, again, in compliance with state law.
Possibly the only positive thing that will ever be connected to Dana Rohrabacher's name.
Yeah. In the letter, Sessions writes, quote, I believe it would be unwise for Congress to restrict the discretion of the department to fund particular prosecutions, particularly in the midst of a historic drug epidemic and potentially long-term uptick in violent crime. Two things, by the way, that marijuana has absolutely nothing to do with, and two things that marijuana could actually help to remedy.
Nice little Southern accent there, by the way, when you started reading that.
Then I got out of it real quick. I didn't know where I was going with it.
So while the healthcare repeal is coming down the pike in secret, and while Dems are just sort of shrugging about it so they can shout about Russia and Iran, let's check in to see what taxes Steve Mnuchin is looking to cut and testimony he gave today before the Senate Budget Committee.
We think that Americans should be taxed once and not twice, that the death tax is unfair, and especially for those family businesses that want to continue on and have been a large engine of driving growth in this country.
That's right, the estate tax. The Trump administration wants to end it while slashing all kinds of social programs. Mnuchin's justification for slashing the estate tax is a total lie, by the way, the justification you just heard. It's not actually a double tax, nor is it a death tax. It is a levy on income received once by trashy fail sons and fail daughters who are reaping windfall based solely on family provenance. That's fucking it. And despite the fact that inheritance is based almost entirely on family ties, saying the estate tax victimizes, quote, family businesses is a complete and total lie. Here's Bernie Sanders to straighten out the Treasury Secretary.
The estate tax applies only to the top 0.2%. 99.8% of Americans would not gain a nickel if the estate tax were repealed.
So who then are these family businesses Mnuchin is trying to protect? Again, Senator Sanders, take it away.
What this is really about, and we should be honest about it, is that people like the Koch brothers, second wealthiest family in America, have spent hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to get benefits like this. So do you really think when you talk about families like the Koch brothers, and the Walton family, and by the way, the Trump family, who would get something like a $4 billion tax break. Do you really think that it makes sense, again, to cut programs that people desperately need to stay alive, and give massive tax breaks to the children of the wealthiest family in this country?
Well, I'm not going to comment on the specifics of the Waltons or the Kochs.
Funny enough, Mnuchin didn't comment about Eric or Donald Jr. or Ivanka either. Love those job creators. And for the record, Sanders had noted that the Walton kids, the sons and daughters of the Walmart-owning family, they could reap a $52 billion windfall if the estate tax is scrapped. No plans to raise taxes on the rich to counterbalance this either. Mnuchin confirmed yesterday that the White House has no intention of vetoing any tax bill that lowers the effective rate for top earners. This contradicts what Mnuchin had said in prior months about offsets for specific reductions for the richest Americans. Quick update on a story we mentioned last week. The Senate today finally voted on the Rand Paul-Chris Murphy resolution disapproving of Trump's $110 billion arms deal to Saudi Arabia. It failed as predicted, but just barely, by a 47-53 vote. Three Republicans, in addition to Rand Paul, backed the initiative: Dean Heller, Mike Lee, and Indiana's Todd Young. Five Democrats joined Republicans to back the arms sale: Joe Donnelly, Joe Manchin, Claire McCaskill, Bill Nelson, and Mark Warner. Interesting, I guess, that both Indiana senators crossed the aisle on the vote. The vote, which comes, by the way, amid a heightening humanitarian crisis in Yemen caused by atrocities perpetrated by the Saudi military with the full support of both the Obama and Trump administrations.
And finally, in other foreign policy news, the worm is back in North Korea. Dennis Rodman landed in North Korea this morning. "I'm just here to see friends and have a good time," he told reporters. When asked, though, if Trump knew he was there, since the two have a prior relationship through The Celebrity Apprentice, Rodman said, quote, "Well, I'm pretty sure he's pretty much happy with the fact that I'm over here trying to accomplish something we both need." Now, shortly after Rodman landed North Korea, in what the U.S. State Department said was completely unrelated to Rodman's visit, declared that it was releasing a U.S. hostage, Otto Warmbier, who's been there since January 2016. Though now free, Otto is reportedly in a coma. He's been in a coma for over a year, according to North Korea. That's unsettling. Back to Rodman. I'm just saying, he gets a lot of snark on Twitter, a lot, well, some of it deservedly. But the dude's got a close relationship with Kim Jong-un. For whatever reason, he's got a relationship with the guy. He's probably the U.S. citizen with the closest relationship to Kim Jong-un. Why not use that? I have no problem with Rodman being dispatched as any sort of diplomat.
No, nor do I. And, you know, he said some dumb stuff about North Korea. There was, like, that famous interview where he was wasted and just, like, screaming about Kenneth Bay, who's another – I can't remember the full backstory, but he was also in prison.
I guarantee you there's a lot of countries that the U.S. has diplomats to. I guarantee you a lot of those diplomats have said a lot of dumb stuff in the past.
No, exactly. I was going to say that, you know, independent of all that, like, why the fuck not just use Rodman?
Use him.
As bizarre as it is.
He's an asset. He's always been an asset.
An asset.
On any team he's been on, he's been an asset. He's an asset if you put him on your team.
Rodman
now
is cleaning up the mess. He's the rebound king. And by the way, I just say, despite whatever dumb stuff he said, probably smarter than half the fucking foreign policy acts in this bullshit town.
Yeah, I got in an internet hole yesterday and started watching the top NBA fights. You know, once a year I like to watch the brawl at the Palace at Auburn Hills, the worst moment in NBA history.
Oh, the Ron Artest one.
Yeah, and that got me into watching, like, montages of all the best fights in NBA history. And I saw one with Larry Bird and Dennis Rodman.
Ooh.
Like, early Dennis Rodman, really young. Larry Bird, dude. Guy's, like, it's hard to believe that he was such a baller. Like, you see videos of him. Like, I wasn't alive to really watch him play. A little too young. But, you know, you hear stories and you see highlights of them, and it's just hard to believe that Larry Bird existed.
Why? Because he looks like a complete fucking
goofy. He was
goofy.
A phenom, dude.
Yeah, he
and
was good as shit.
He was scrappy, man. You didn't mess with Larry Bird.
No.
That's the show today, folks. Listeners, call our rant line. That number is 202-684-6108. Sponsors of the show include the Congressional Dish podcast, hosted by Jennifer Briney. Check it out at congressionaldish.com. Another sponsor, levelnews.org. Listen to this episode, all other episodes of our nightly newscast, by going to districtsentinel.com. If you haven't yet, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or tune in by searching for District Sentinel Radio. Leave a review, give us a rating, tell your friends to listen. We're back tomorrow. We're in D.C., so you don't have to be.